With the summer here, I needed to add some new bits to my wardrobe. After eking out the absolute most I possibly could out of some stuff I bought maybe a decade ago, it was time for a refresh. And that's where Quince came in. With Quince, I was able to get some great new swimwear and some new summer casual pants that both work great and look great. The fits are clean, the fabric feels nice, and everything just works without needing to overthink it. I'm able to look way more put together, but still feel casual and comfortable. For example, the summer pants I got fit really well, but more importantly, they breathe really well, so they can handle whatever temperature it is outside, which in the upper Midwest summer can be quite a treat some days. And the swimwear is great for when I just gotta get away from that heat. Quince has all the wardrobe staples for spring and summer. Think 100% European linen shorts and shirts from $34, lightweight, breathable, and comfortable, but still look put together. Their pants also hit that same balance, relaxed and comfortable, but still polished enough to wear pretty much everywhere. And everything is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands, because Quince works directly with ethical factories to cut out middlemen, so you're getting premium materials without the markup. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/40klore for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/40klore for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/40klore. You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote on discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we'll be starting a coverage of Brad's favorite legion. The Word Bearers.
Yay. Now, I do like their demon summoning stuff.
The problem with Word Bearers is actually everything except for Lorgar is kind of cool about them. It's just that they have the worst Primarch. That's how I actually view them.
They're not as bad as the Night Lords, and the fact of who did you choose to be part of your legion? But it's up there as far as, yeah, man, went down. Yeah, no.
Oh, yeah, they're better than the Night Lords. Like the Night Lords, are pure evil. These guys are, we'll get into it. They're a bit weird.
I'm not saying that they're pure evil. They started as pure evil. They started as a bunch of problems. We'll go into it when they chose. This is setting yourself up for failure when you went, who's part of this legion? You're like, yeah, that's going to not work, man.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. All right. 40K Lorecast, a weekly show focusing the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Please follow, comment on the cast. I love reading the comments. There are a lot of them now, like a lot, but that's cool. It also helps our algorithm and pushes us out to more people. If you like us and want to check out more stuff, check out our YouTube channel for our bi-ish, monthly-ish Q&A-ishes. You can also check out our...
I love the show. Ish, by the way. There's so much ish, always
there.
Ish.
There's a lot of ish there. It is we really want to, but there's a lot of getting around to it. If you like this show and you want to check out some more stuff, especially about Warhammer 40K on the tabletop, check out our other show, The History of 40K, we add in Brad and my friend Alan, who discuss a lot more of the history of the game on the tabletop.
Alan, you just Debo Alan? What happened here?
What do you mean?
My friend Alan.
I said Brad and mine. I said you two.
I said not.
Yes, I said Brad
the
and
recording.
My.
I've never been wrong. I'll never be wrong again. Never mind. My go-to thing is I've been wrong. I'll be wrong again.
Are we really going to add ears to not working to the rest of your organs? You're running out of functioning pieces.
Ooh, I have a funny story.
You might be worth nothing on the black market. Your body is worth nothing.
Nope. You're going to do this. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I'm telling people because it's funny. I have great hearing. However, since some of my last things, I don't have spatial hearing anymore. When I hear like a loud noise, I don't know where it's coming from. It actually screws up my video game playing because directional stuff messes up me up.
This is why I love you as a friend. Just to follow through what you said there. I have great something followed by, but it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like,
however, I can hear things very well. How about that? Just now.
No, you can't.
Good.
Like, no, you can't.
What's the Zoolander school? That's where I go to. For kids anyway. Can't read so good.
If you want to support us, not that you apparently should, you can.
You should. I'm hanging on by a thread. I need some Patreon money to not die.
God, you can help us out by clicking on the links. You can either purchase our merchandise via our website or support our Patreon. If you want to support us, Patreon is $4.99 a month. You get this show and History of 40K ad-free or 3.27 Guernsey pounds. Because today we're going to the Bollywalk of Guernsey, a place I did not know existed until I wrote these notes. So welcome to Learning with John. Turns out during the 500 Years War, French just didn't notice a bunch of islands off their coast or something. I can't figure this out. It's like right off Le Puy. But they're British, sort of. It's a parliamentary constitutional monarchy, which sounds fancy, but it's just what Britain, Belgium, Spain, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Luxembourg, Monaco, Cambodia, Thailand, Australia, and most of the world have. So the Bollywalk of Guernsey is a independent, very much so-ish country in the middle of the channel that are not part of the UK, but the UK is totally responsible for all of their international stuff, including their military. So I guess Guam, I don't know. Their history is cool, though. When William invaded England in 1066, he missed these islands. So all the Normans stayed there, and they got to stay British. And then later, they joined the rest of the UK and became an independent-ish country. And we had some listeners there. So I know they're going to argue with me about this, and I look forward to the comments in Discord. I'm ready for it. But fun facts about it. It's a pretty independent place. So Victor Hugo actually lived there during political exile. This is where he wrote Les Mis, because Bollywalk is a spot that really accepts free speech. They also have one of the highest life expectancies on earth at 82.8 years. So Brad, don't move there and bring it down. That's likely to their topography, though, their lifestyle, and a lot of very good fresh air. They live in a really good spot for good breezes. They also, really fun fact, are the site of the only ever underwater arrest, where there was a poacher grabbing underwater shellfish, and he was arrested by a scuba diving police officer. And I know it didn't happen, but I really wish he was wearing that like policeman hat when he did it. It would have been a lot better. I'm sure just a regular scuba diver, but I like the idea of him wearing the big, tall bobby hat. Anyway. All right. But lastly, as always, Discord. Discord's a great spot for us. Please join it if you haven't. And if you have joined it, thank you. I'm loving the comments. Super fun place. We have a channel there called Ask John and Brad. I always respond. So is Brad. So if you want to ask us stuff.
Slowly. I am the world's best and worst responder because I will respond, but it'll often be, what is he talking about? Oh, yeah, Brad responded to
it. Make sure you tag Brad. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I also read back all the time, which is why you get responses to me way later.
Good job. Is this all because of your exceptional hearing?
Excellent hearing. I'm the guy that goes, hey guys, did you see that new movie Heat? I want to talk about it.
Nope. Although completely unrelated. The other day I had to explain to someone the movie Cobra.
Yes.
Yeah, that is shit.
The villains are so pointless, by the way. They're like just guys.
They're communist cultists.
Yeah, they're just so pointless. The dude has a hand axe.
Okay, actually, Side note, I don't know why we're doing this, but I have to do this real quick. So the movie is called Cobra. It comes out in 1986. It's written and stars Sylvester Stallone. And one of my favorite parts about this is he's part of the LAPD zombie squad. It's part of the LAPD that plays by their own rules and does what they need to. And I love that this is 1986. 1987, we get NWA. 1992, we get the Rodney King riots. Turns out that zombie squad thing was really accurate and was a horrible, horrible thing. Anyway, on to actual cast. Word bearers.
Huzzah!
Today's show is sponsored by the word irony. Irony, when you want to be right, but you find a way to be magically very, very wrong. So, the word bearers, this is a party. All legions, as we've discovered before, were created with a purpose. The Emperor, I guess, was trying to like Power Ranger all of his legions in the end, or for people like Brad and I, Voltron.
Voltron.
See, Rich, Voltron's way better. Everyone had a purpose, and they were all going to combine later to solve all of his problems by doing all these individual things. It did not work, and this one more spectacularly than all the rest. Well, the 13th worked perfectly, but outside of the 13th, every other one of his plans didn't really quite work out as planned. The 17th were made up of recruits from a very specific set. Like the precursors to the World Eaters, the 17th came not from a region, but from a psychotype. I hate Carl Jung, but whatever, we can play this out. And if I have to take one more goddamn Myers-Briggs test at work, I'm going to kill somebody. I'm in my mid-40s. I'm aware of my personality type. It's really clear. I don't need to take any more of these Myers-Briggs tests. All right, the 17th Legion. The 17th are funny, man. They're taken from the sons of those people that the Emperor defeated. Not the ones that surrendered.
I was about to say, don't do it as surrender. Also, they're not tribute. It is people he went, I put the people's elbow on you, strapped in my boots and body ass kicking, and I'm taking some people with me. These are the people that the Legion is made up on.
Yeah, these are people who are subjugated, is I think the better term for it. These are all people who said, no, I'm not going to abide by your rule, and I'm going to fight you. And these are people, the thing about this, and we didn't cover this very well in the past, during the Unification Wars, if you fought the Emperor, he wasn't super cool about it. After the fact, it was these people would become, there'd be penance. They would spend generations doing stuff for him. There were some that he was a little bit better about because it came from very wealthy areas. But for the most part, it was generational debt was owed. That's where he pulled them from. And the idea is he wanted recruits who come out of this who understood standing against me is the ultimate crime. For lack of a better phrase. And the 17th were going to be his cudgel. Because while most...
I don't have cudgel. I would go with it. It's more the Emperor, the word bearers right away brought heraldry about this is you. What are you possibly thinking? This is the Emperor. This is what happens if you do anything to the Emperor. Immediately, they were going to pop into it. They were the immediately became the heralds.
Well, that's what's fascinating about them. So everyone else went by a number. They're the 17th, except for them. They changed their name over to the Imperial Herald.
Immediately, yeah.
And if you're eating or drinking right now, be careful. I don't want you to choke because the Emperor knew the greatest threat to humanity was humanity itself. Not the way you might think of like humanity is going to just fight itself. It was the fact that he knew humanity was susceptible to chaos. Emperor.
And numerous enough to make a huge impact on the warp itself and change things. We were pieces to be moved by the chaos gods, effectively. There was so much raw material to work with in humanity.
Well, yeah. And the problem was the Emperor knew about the fall of the Eldar. And the thing to understand about this is that, so for example, the Eldar are much more psychically attuned than humanity is. The Eldar are their beacons within the warp. Humanity isn't. But the Eldar were not that big. The Eldar occupied maybe an eighth of the galaxy. They had webways spread all over the place, but the reason the Eye of Terror is where it is because that's where the Eldar civilization was. The Eldar civilization was not as big as you'd think it would be. Humanity's, the goal of the Emperor was to conquer the entire galaxy
and seed it with humans everywhere. Yeah.
And so if you think about it, as this is going on, this happened during the Dark Age of Technology, more and more psychers are occurring. So just the math game here becomes an issue for the Emperor. He knows there's going to be more psychers. There's going to be more people. So yes, we might not be as psychically in tuned as the Eldar, but we do have psychers, which are pretty close, but our numbers are going to be astronomic.
And you don't have to be a psychic to affect the warp also. It's just the belief what's going on.
The bigger problem,
effectively.
True. The bigger problem is humanity itself. The Eldar are basically immortal. So yeah, they did go down a dark path and birth a dark god, but it took them 65 million years. to get there. Humanity live short, very painful and violent lives. That's just what humanity is. That is right.
Quickly. People make deals on the worst stuff in the old devil plot packs and stuff like that.
Yeah. So they're perfect for this. So the Emperor knew he had to do something about it. So what does he do about it? Great idea. He just starts yelling, "Hey, there are no gods," very loudly. And the people didn't listen to that because they were like, yeah, okay, but like, seriously, I'm going to keep doing this anyway. So he had a new plan. I'm going to enforce there are no gods. And who does he get to do this? The precursors of the word bears, the 17th Legion. The 17th Legion were given the title Imperial Heralds because they were going to spread the word of the Emperor. And the word of the Emperor was that science is everything. There are no gods. There is no supernatural. And to say otherwise is heresy.
And yes, and they were very fervent about that, almost like they worshiped the Emperor immediately as a god.
And this was, by the way, these are the good old days of this. You think about it. I like to think about it as like, these are the good old days of heresy, where heresy was just simply saying, hey, I wonder if there's a god. And they were like, no, that's heresy. Not the new ones where it's like, there's actually demons. I'm worshiping one. Yeah. All right. So in many ways, the 17th Legion were a legion of chaplains, which is ironic because they actually do become that later.
Yeah. Also, what do you mean they kind of were? They wore black armor, skulls. They carried Croziuses. They're just chaplains. There's a bunch of them.
It's funny. So the reason I say this, we're going to get more to that at the end of this cast. They wore the equipment of a chaplain. Later, they become chaplains. That's the difference here. We're going to get there later. But for now, the Imperial Heralds, their helmet was a skull helmet, and they wore all black armor, and they carried a giant mace.
Well, let's back up just a smidge on this, because of the fact, let's talk about 40K as a whole real quick and how this goes into it. So 40K is supposed to be in Inquisition Age, you know, where we're smashing out heresy. We've lost knowledge, and the word bearers were the people that really pushed this. They are the people that caused the Horus Heresy. This is them. They started out as the Inquisition. They're going around burning heretical knowledge, anything that was considered not the imperial truth. That's how they started. This is before Lorgar gets there.
Yeah.
They were going door to door, burning the books, killing people for their beliefs.
they were going into libraries and checking every book. They were taking out buildings if you had the wrong mural on it, entire towns, whatever it was. They started on Terra, and as the crusade began, they began doing this kind of everywhere. And I kind of like the story of how they would handle the crusade, because we said the beginning of the crusade, the rogue traders all went out first. They marked all the planets, so they knew where to go. The first legion was like, hey, bad Xeno thing, go there. 13th legion, these guys are kind of agreeable, so maybe don't just blow their planet up. Throw it out there. But the 17th were the tricky ones. The 17th were the ones who were, they'd be good for the 13th, but there's a lot of worship there. And so they would send the 17th, and the first thing that would happen is a single chaplain would go down and would meet with the leader, and they would sit there and they would basically give a lecture on the Emperor and how they're wrong about all this worship stuff. Well,
let's pause on this, because this would go better if they didn't start most of their negotiations with, "You're stupid. Everything you know is stupid. and here's what you should do about it. That's how they started. They talk about their writings quite a bit. They're unbelievably super insulting. They're not trying to convince you that this is better. They're just telling you how dumb and wrong you are. And then, well, even if you don't agree with me, we'll just kill you if you don't agree with me.
Yeah, they also did have 100,000 space marines in orbit.
I mean, the might makes right. Come on now. My argument is very, very good.
I did like this because they would sit there and they would just say to them, this is the deal. Agree with us. The Emperor's there. Or else. And what would happen a lot of times is they would just attack the Herald who was sitting there. And the Herald would just kill a bunch of people, die in the process. And then the next thing that happened was a full Astartes invasion. But they would invade, basically treating them like heretics. To Brad's point earlier, the way that the Inquisition would invade in modern 40K, just going, you people aren't worth it. We are going to exterminate everyone here. We're going to, and while we're coming through looking for any evidence of worship, destroy that. True brutality, absolute, like forcing them to bend the knee and devastate them. And this planet after planet, and they were hunting down.
And they did all, it's so funny because instead of the First Legion, the Dark Angels, who would exterminate people and get rid of the all traces of them, the Word Bearers were doing this. Well, the Imperial Heralds of the time were doing this, but they were making it so they were exterminating any signs and history of idols, relics, everything they had from before. They would get rid of all of that. They were crazy about it too. They would hunt it down.
Yep. And so they would exterminate us planet after planet this way. But to Brad's point, it wasn't a full exterminatus, like virus bomb exterminatus. It was just going through and getting, all right, take that building down, burn that library, then bring in the settlers type setup. But this continues for about 60 years. Lorgar is one of the later discoveries until they get a Primarch, and they're going to take a left turn after the discovery of the Primarch. But we have to now go over to, I'm going to pronounce this Colchis. It could be Colchis. I'm going Colchis.
I will say Colchis, but continue. But one of my favorite.
It's not Colchis, is it? Colchis? I mean, it's an Italian. Colchis.
One of my favorite things. Colchis. One of my favorite things about this episode is I knew when I would get the notes that you were going to spend an overt amount of time on the orbit of the planet because it's
wrong.
Because also the how they define the week and everything.
This is the Hobbit thing. Yeah.
This is something that should have been one sentence. And I knew for sure it was going to be, you did not disappoint.
Yeah.
I was so happy.
Let's party. So sitting on the upper sinistral side of the galaxy from Sol is, I'm going Colchis, screw everybody. Colchis is a massive world, three times the size of Terra in a slow orbit. So it's a little bit smaller than Uranus. Yeah, I looked that up this morning. It's important. It is important. We should just start. So that's it. I'm not going to use Northeast, Southwest, and every planet. I'm going to use the scale of Uranus. That is the new thing going forward. Deal with it. All right. It also has a really slow rotation. A single day takes 170.4 hours, which means the planet would be in a freeze thaw pattern. Because if solstice is split, that means you'd have 85 hours of pure darkness, which would cause a massive cooling point, killing off all life. And if you don't believe me, 536 AD fog. Just Google that. You'll know what I'm talking about. And that was a volcano did that. And that was just a fog. So 36 degree Fahrenheit drop. Fog. But anyway, the people of Colchis.
How do they break up their days, though?
To the people of Colchis, this was not a death sentence, but just an annoyance. And apparently, because their watches didn't work well, so they had to figure out what to do about a day that was too long. So they decided to do the Hobbit thing. And not joking, this is what they did, because a 170-hour day is broken into seven parts, because that's 170 divided by seven is 24.3. So we get dawn a day, morn day, long noon, post noon, dusk eve, cold fall, and high night. Lame. In other words, they had 7 days of the week inside of a day. Who gives a crap? Why write this? I mean, this is the thing. Also, here's the best part of all. They wrote this whole thing like, yeah, they had to adjust for having a weird timetable because the sun's moving around and like their day is really long. And I remember reading this going like, okay, well, whatever. And then you know what I remembered? Space travel's a thing. You know what they don't have in space travel? Day, night, orbit, anything. But you know what they do? Figure it out. And they don't have dawn a day, morn day in the middle of a spaceship. They just go with, all right, it's 6 a.m. in Seoul. That's what time it is now. Move on with your day. Every planet in the entire Imperium would have this problem unless somehow all of them have the exact same rotation speed as Earth. This is so poorly written.
I would end this rant if I wasn't going to go into my own rant about the Covenant in about 5 minutes.
All right. But skipping past that massive collection of incorrect, Colchis is best described as a ruined planet. The world was arid and it had these settlements spread around it. And additionally, in orbit around it is a bunch of derelict spacecraft just kind of floating there.
Well, the thing is, around Colchis, there's enough derelict spacecraft to make it a point. It's not like there's three ships up there. There's something went down.
Oh, yeah.
They, you know, in the history of this, and they're significant enough where they bring it up quite a bit, to be honest with you. Like, there's a lot of crap up.
It didn't go well. And it's what we've learned, kind of learned more as time goes on with more novels. The truth on, you can call it Colchis, I'll call it Colchis, and one of us will be right. Colchis was a highly successful, prosperous world during the Golden Age of Technology. And during the Dark Age of Technology, it didn't do great. In fact, it did pretty badly.
Hey, we get to talk about feudal societies, which is one of your favorites.
This one, actually, they did correctly, though. So this is the thing. Okay, I have to give them credit. Usually, when GW refers to a world as being a feudal world, they just are not even in the ballpark. This one, they nailed, because it's, you know, it's spread across. You have it's all broken up into what are basically city states that have their own regions that they rule in. They're high, each of them has a high powered ruler who control their areas, and below them, the citizenry, it sucks being them, and they have slaves and indentured servants. Check, check, check. Well, that's feudalism. Well,
hold on. Yes, you're selling it short on this. The majority of the citizens are slaves and indentured servants.
Check, check, check. That's feudalism. And then there's a hidden secret superclass called the Covenant in this situation who rule over. It was a monarchy before. Now we have, well, actually, in 1100, we're kind of pushing this one too, or actually more once.
This ends up being a city state, but we're ruled by a theocracy.
Yeah, which is technically the Church of England, but that's a side note for a different day. But now we get into the Covenant. The Covenant was a religion on Colchis that rose up as the Dark Age of Technology kind of befell the galaxy. Nothing's known exactly about what happened in Colchis at that time, but we can infer a lot. And by a lot, I mean a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. The Covenant talks about a divine leader who would come to lead them one day, and the divine leader would bring with them great power and knowledge and would uplift.
This is the best prophecy ever because it totally comes to be.
Yeah. Although there is a variation. So it gets a little bit tricky because there's levels to this because the Covenant also was, Lorgar is going to shift this to be much more aggressive on an individual. Some of them were more polytheistic. So, like, we talk about this great leader coming.
Screw this. This is where Brad's going to rant on this. Polytheistic, specifically to the number 4.
Well, it wasn't, but that's the thing. The thing is, like, this is where it does move around a bit. There is a number 4 in this. The challenge is, like, their religion is both monolateralism, but it's also probably, I think it's Cathenotheism is the other one, where you do have, you either have, it's all Either is the religion one where there's one supreme and you've got multiples underneath it, or is it one where depending on what region you are, that one's more important, like how Roman, I don't know which one it is, if it's Catholicism or Monolatruism, it's going to fall into one of those categories, but it doesn't really matter because here's where the fun part is. Because we're talking about the pilgrimage a little bit later. Well, actually, we're talking about the pilgrimage now. The pilgrimage is the part that Brad wants to get to, which is wild. And this is what we're going to cover in our next cast. Oh, is that a cool story? But the pilgrimage is a story which makes a lot of sense later. Sorry, guys, but it'll make more sense later. In it, four prophets took a long journey to seek the knowledge of the gods, and they brought it back to Colchis. And this knowledge became the basis for the covenant, and this helped deliver Colchis from the darkness. The names of those prophets are a bit of a key. So we've got Kane, K-H-A-A-N-E, Tezen, T-E-Z-E-N, Slanat, S-L-A-N-A-T, and Narag, N-A-R-A-G.
So, Korin, Zeech, Sladesh, and Nurgle. I love this because they literally went, hey, man, let me see your homework. Just make it look a little bit different. And then you just scratched out the name and wrote your name at the top. That is what's going on here. They didn't even try to hide this. Yeah. Also, when they have the four prophets, they went to the four chaos gods. Yes. Yeah,
it is. They were, and we're going to cover, this makes a lot more sense. I just don't want to dive into a weird thing that'll make more sense later. But in our next cast, Lorgar kind of goes on this. Well, doesn't kind of, he goes on this pilgrimage, and it's going to make a ton of sense. There's this, these novels, by the way, if you want to get a good understanding of kind of what happened with the Emperor and the Primarch Project and a ton of stuff, the Lorgar novels are the best ones for it. They really do.
They get really in-depth on this. They clear a lot of stuff up. This
those books are really good and for that. So we'll name them as we go through them. But another key element of the Covenant is that it is in constant internal conflict with itself.
It's four chaos gods.
Well, yes and no. This is why I say it's kind of tricky. It's the four chaos gods, but I think of it less as like the gods fighting with each other. I think of it more like Catholic Church, 11th to 13th century, or maybe like 16th, 17th. It's more 11th, 13th.
I was saying, but the thing is that the answer is yes, but I think that's because there's internal fighting, because again, the gods themselves fight consistently, constantly.
I view it less as I don't think the people really were actually that religious. That's why I actually think of it more as 16th, 17th. I view it more.
The thing is, people were trying to get out of the mud, so you were trying to get power and not be an indentured servant.
Exactly. Yes. Hey, because the thing is, the Covenant were this unofficial ruling class on the planet. So a lot of people aspired for the key roles in the Covenant, because this is not a democracy. This is a meritocracy. So if you show leadership and power, people follow you. The more people that follow you, the more leadership, the more power you get. But it also means as you try to make that rise, more criticism, more threats. And so now we're going to talk about Corferon.
Corferon.
Hooray.
We'll be right back after a quick break. Earlier this year, I decided to give HIMS a try in order to shed some weight I've been struggling to get off for the last 6 years, and I'm so glad I did. If you want to know what's really worth your time when it comes to losing weight, skip the guesswork and get weight loss by HIMS. HIMS offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications that now include Wegovy pill and Wegovy pen. Plus, lifestyle tips to support you along the way. With Wegovy at Hims, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite and eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there's no needles needed, which is really kind of nice. Through Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if the treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Hims makes hitting your goals seamless by offering 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition choices like recipes, meals, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hims makes it simple to find a weight loss approach that fits your world and your wallet. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as long as needed. Ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/40klore to get personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/40klore. hims.com/40klore. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is a registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit hims.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, and that can lead to overwhelm and counting down the minutes until kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting the days of sunshine. I know for me, summer can be a little bit tough as I'm juggling a lot more with work in addition to the regular families, hobbies, and friends. I often feel overwhelmed, and that overwhelming leads to feelings of stress as I worry that I'm letting others down. This at times leads me to actually dread the summer months, which then makes me mad at myself for dreading some of the best times of the year. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. And if you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, with over 30,000 therapists having served over 6 million people globally. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Like a lot of people on Colchis, Cora Farron was an orphan. That's a common theme here. Now, raised in an orphanage, he joins the Covenant as a priest. Cora Farron did not read this stuff and think, all right, I'm going to go preach and get rich. He believed. He saw the chaos gods are real. He didn't realize they were chaos, but the gods are real. And one thing that began to annoy him was that the people of Colchis were religious, but not that religious.
I like the term, though, that they use on this, because they were like, the priests were out converting people and asking them to be worshipers of the gods. And Cora Farron goes, I don't really understand why you're asking. And yes, I'm doing air quotes and no one can see me because that's what I do. Yeah. But he was like, why are we giving them a choice? Yeah. It's just, this is treason to the way of our way of life. We should be putting the beat down on anybody that doesn't.
His viewpoint was that apostasy was tantamount to treason. That was his viewpoint. And he was fervent. Now, the Covenant decided that he's weird. And so because this is a threat to them. They are trying to make money off of the populace. They don't want to be mean to the populace. So he wants to be mean to the populace. So what they do is they kick him out in the desert to live with all the other weirdos. Problem with that.
Well, you're like, you should stop exiling and start killing because he gets all the exiles together.
That's the thing. You put a bunch of weirdos out in the desert, all the weirdos get together, and it wasn't too long before Cora Farron was leading all of the weirdos. It's quite likely Zeej did this, by the way.
He's super powered with his oratory skills. He has sorcerer ways. So he's either doing Zeej or he's doing like Big Slanesh. Weirdly enough, Korn actually has power over the sway of people if you're rallying them for war.
He was rallying them for revolution. So this was Zeej, is my assumption. But I mean, all the gods were working together here because they knew what was coming. Lorgar. Like every Primarch, Lorgar was sent across the galaxy by chaos gods. Or was it them? And we're going to cover that next cast. It may not have been the chaos gods. Different story, different day. Arriving on Colchis as an infant, Lorgar was discovered by a nomadic people called the Decline. Great NoFX song. Last song they ever played, and I was actually there when they played it. But their leader of the Decline is a guy named Than Morgall. And Morgall sees this infant, Lorgar, and knew it was special. So he's what named him Lorgar, which is called Raincaller. Meh. And after about 2 weeks, Lorgar is the size of a small child, which again, I brought this up before, where is this food coming from? I love these people are like nomadic, and same thing happened with Sanguinius. We're nomadic. We're barely scraping by, but we've found this being that's tripling in size by the day. I know what an
50,000 calories a day.
Yeah. I know what a baby elephant eats, and these are growing faster than that. Blue whales. Where is this coming from? But anyway, the nomadic decline run into Corpheron, his people, and Corpheron sees Lorgar and basically recognizes the power in him immediately. And Corpheron starts talking to Lorgar.
Sorry. This is where you get that Corpheron's kind of a dick, because he immediately goes, yeah, like a super mega. I love that he goes, hey, you know what? I see in this guy a way that I can get power and get my way. And goes, do I tell these people that I want to take the kid, convince him? Because he does convince him to rock. And then he's like, yeah, I don't want anybody to know about this. So I'm just going to murder all of them immediately for kind of no reason.
Clear reason why he does this. But yeah, he has his followers. Corpheron has his followers murder the entire decline and bury them in the desert. And him and Lorgar leave. Now, this is a key thing, Brad just hinted at it there, but I want to drive this home. Almost every other Primarch who was found, the person who found them saw greatness in the Primarch and wanted to aid the Primarch in their ascension so that the Primarch could then uplift the entire society. Sanguinius, Korax, Fulgrim, Gilliman, obviously, Magnus. They all saw something in this where they were going to use this person to help all society. Corpheron is closer to the Nusarians, who were like, all right, we're just going to use this thing. In Lorgar, there was a tool. So he begins to abuse Lorgar really badly. They do call out he does it physically.
Physically, mentally, but
I refuse to accept that.
For like the first month, and then you went, yeah, man, if you touch me again, I'll bane you.
But he does. But that's the thing. Like they call it, oh, he abuses Lorgar. That just doesn't work. Lorgar is still a Primarch. I mean, we make fun of him a lot as far as Primarchs go, but I can tell you,
a Primarch.
Yes, Corpheron could punch Lorgar in the face and Lorgar might not notice. It's very hard to abuse a Primarch.
But he is definitely mentally abusing him.
Very much so. Good God. But this whole time he's abusing him, Lorgar is reading and reading and reading. And my opinion is that I think Lorgar puts up with all the abuse because Lorgar actually realizes that Corpheron was right. Corpheron is correct about all of these teachings. The gods are real. There is something there. And what he realizes is that, yes, it's a polytheism, but there is a single entity that binds them all together. So I guess it was henotheism, but that's not important. So spoiler alert, by the way, he's kind of right, because the writings that he's reading are old. So when these pilgrims had come to Colchis, this is during the Dark Age. So this is after the Emperor had visited the Chaos Gods and left, for timing this out about right. The Chaos Gods believed at that time that the Emperor was going to be the fifth and most powerful Chaos God. This isn't Malice. We'll do Malice at a different time. But the Emperor betrayed them between those two periods of time. So the writings Lorgar's reading is the belief that a fifth Chaos God is going to come and unite all of them and basically destroy the galaxy. What's the guy in, that's Sigmar, but that predates Sigmar, that destroyed the galaxy?
Archaon.
Thank you. That's what that was the idea. I think the Emperor was supposed to be Archaon, but then didn't. So Lorgar is the first person to ever read these texts and fully comprehend them. So he's dead right. Corpheron, though, because he's kind of a whiny little bitch, didn't agree with this.
Kind of?
Yeah. And he starts, but the problem for Corpheron is he starts losing the argument with Lorgar because he's nowhere near as intelligent as Lorgar. And he's,
again, Lorgar's a Primarch.
Exactly. And the issue, though, is that he's losing the
argument. Back it up, too. Not only is he losing arguments because one of us is a Primarch genius.
Yeah.
Also, he looks like a Primarch. So
looks like a god. I mean, we make fun of Lorgar a lot because of the Primarchs, he's low. But of a person, again, going back to my hatred of Luther, I'm still picking Lorgar in that fight. You know?
Well, it's just one of those things where you're like having an argument, you're like, I'm going to go with the god. Yeah. You're having an argument versus Ted and Hercules. I'm going to go with the demigod over here. He looks right. How about that?
Yeah. And he's also seems to be a bit more eloquent than you are. So over time, though, the other followers of Corferon, they're hearing these arguments and they're all going, yeah, Lorgar actually seems to be making much better points. And also, you know, Brad's point, one of them looks like a god. One day, there's a big disagreement between the two of them, and Corferon just gets mad and tells his followers to go beat Lorgar. And the followers go, no, and they attack Corferon. They do a full mutiny on the bounty. But while they go to overthrow him, Lorgar just kills them.
I was going to go Royal Rumble. I just starts dropping elbows on everybody, which, to be fair, Corferon was a lot cooler to him after he saved his life and... Yeah. But not super cool, just moved into big, shitty psychological manipulation on him.
Yeah. Now, time passes, and Lorgar, the legend of Lorgar grows. His little merry band of preachers starts to reach more and more influence. And eventually, some of the main cities start to find out about him. And he begins to, people actually start leaving the cities to go to
him. Well, people are doing pilgrimages to find him, mm-hmm. specifically.
So he takes up this mantle of leader, and he does this cool thing because Lorgar, Brad, was better than Conrad. He starts freeing people. He begins attacking settlements and freeing the slaves there, not just pulling people's skin off for no apparent reason. You know, he does this cool stuff. He becomes a liberator of the masses. Until eventually the covenant...
He's the breaker of chains?
Yeah. Well, it worked, didn't it? So eventually the covenant takes notice. And them, being of pretty high intelligence, realize that it's either we admit Lorgar into the fold or we're going to...
Killed. We all get killed. Let's be honest.
And Corferon this whole time has moved himself into the title of Archdeacon of Lorgar, a.k.a. right-hand guy. Lorgar joins the covenant and eventually becomes the leader. It's not an official thing because they don't have a formal leadership. It's just a popularity contest.
You know, instantaneously, he gets a lot of guys that are like, who the hell is this guy? Why does he have power? Also, these guys aren't true believers in what's going on.
Exactly.
These guys are using
the covenant. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Full stop. These are charlatans over and over and over again in the car. And they're kind of watching because it's funny. As Lorgar gains power, like I said, it's not a official like political thing. So as more and more people worship Lorgar, that means more and more the money goes to Lorgar, more and more the influence goes to Lorgar. So these other leaders who are just there to get rich are now seeing their revenue drop and they're getting mad and they're looking for an opportunity. And the opportunity, well, we're going to say it presents itself, doesn't end well, but it's funny. So... Lorgar, like a lot of the other Primarchs, was having visions, and his vision is a god clad in bronze armor coming to Colchis, and next to him is a giant Cyclops, which also, all right, side note, why is Magnus a Cyclops, not a pirate? It would have been so much better. I be Magnus the Red. Ye world is here for the Imperium. Surrender, you walk the plank. That would have been so much better. You know I'm right, too. Come on, you love yourself some freebooters.
Yes, right? I do.
It would have been, imagine the Thousand Sons instead of or the Recycler Pirates. That's a much better army. That's a much better army. Anyway, side note for the day. Lorgar begins preaching, though, because of this, the coming of the great god to Colchis, but not coming one day, like he's coming next week. Guys. And so all the prophecies are about to come true, which is a real negative on tithing. All of a sudden, money starts to dry up even more. So the members of the covenant declare Lorgar a heretic, saying he's not preaching the correct teaching of the covenant. And they say someone should arrest him. And they go to do that. Doesn't end great.
Also, bad decision. So they just effectively start a holy war because they say that he's a heretic and this is ridiculous. And Lorgar proceeds to just go on a world tour of ass kicking city to city.
Yeah. So the thing, what I would say about this is the holy war, it's called the Schism War. And my issue with a lot of this is we talk about Lorgar through this as being this like preacher. Lorgar is still hyper violent. So he's not this like, yes, Cor Farron was being mean to him. Yes, Cor Farron was beating him up. But through all this, Lorgar still is a war primarch. And Lorgar leads his forces on a city by city tour of just conquering. And he does this one, this system, though, a special way. He walks up to each city and he stands outside and gives a speech. I'm assuming Say Anything style. Are we doing this?
Absolutely like, not.
It's, yes, it is.
Lord, it's Lord Humongous from the Road Warrior with his microphone.
No, not as
nobody else gets alive.
No, no. I'm doing this as Say Anything. He's out there with a boombox.
It worked on Diane.
Yeah, it worked on Diane. It's working on the people. But it actually does. He starts off on Varadesh.
Like Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, yeah. But I do like the first one he does it to is funny. He goes to Varadesh and he gives his whole speech. Varadesh is the capital. And all of a sudden the gates open. The people carry out all the dead corpses of the leaders of the covenant there. And he goes, all right, that one worked. And so for the next 6 years, this war continues until they get to the last one, which is, Garavarala. Again, we're going to have a fun little John comment in a second here, but Garavarala is not just, it's not a capital, but it's a really powerful feudal state. And it's a powerful feudal state. Why? Because it has some dark age of technology. Ooh, what's it got? Oh, it's got a really special weapon. What could that weapon be? It makes storms.
It made rain. It wasn't even.
Yeah, it was a storm generator. That's right. If you're going to attack Gaiarila, you're going to have to go through a storm in the 30th millennia, a thing we can get through in the second millennia. But luckily, Lorgar was there and he parted the storms, so no one got wet. I had no idea. It's a storm generator. And I was thinking, like, yeah, like our military can drive through a storm today. how bad is this wind supposed to be? It's really gusty. Do you know what an M1 A1 Abrams weighs? It can handle gusty. Like, there's also lightning. Yeah, also can handle that. I don't think it's that big of a deal. Anyway, Schism War ends. But the death toll is just beginning. Like any protracted war, we're going to go with, I was going to call it one thing, but I'm going to have to call it a different thing. Yezhovenchina is what I'm going to go with. Yezhovenchina.
I was going to rock out with Stalin. You go out with Mao. Apparently, they had to get rid of some people that weren't true believers. And when I say some people, I mean one third of the population.
Yeah, that's why I went, Yezhovenchina, is I think how you pronounce this. Effectively, it's claimed that after the war, one third of the population decided to turn against Lorgar, just like Trotsky and Kamenev and Zinoviev did. They just happened to do it at that moment. And all of Lorgar's followers went city to city on a murder spree. So
pretty big murder spree.
Yeah, it was fun. But within a year of this happening, a ship arrives and out walks the Emperor and Magnus. I be here. Sorry, that's my new thing with him. Immediately, Lorgar knows his vision has come true, as did all the people. The god has come to liberate them. And they start to have this giant feast, multi-month long. The Emperor begins saying, I'm not the Messiah. And the people of Colchis immediately say, well, we say you are, and we should know because we've followed a few.
And like, we've been watching Life of Brian for a while here, so we know what's going on.
This is off the Holy Guard. No, follow the sandal of truth. It's, I can quote this movie a lot. Because only he who is without. All right. But the Emperor had brought with him the Imperial Heralds, and he just basically gives them to Lorgar and says, all right, go crusade. Now, this is usually the part in the cast where we start talking about Lorgar and the Great Crusade, but we can't because we have another character to get to. So, whoop.
Pause on 1 second, though. I do want to stress how Lorgar's already been pushing this whole, we're about to get the savior, everything else, the one true God. It shows up, the Emperor says no, and everybody, I can't stress enough how much they ignore that and go, excellent, that is definitely what the God, is the true God would
say.
Life
of Brian. This lore was written well after The Life of Brian came out. Watch that scene, read this lore, and you realize they took that scene and made it serious.
Yeah.
That's all that
100%.
The Emperor is routinely saying, stop worshiping me. I'm over this now. Can we please get on with it? And they are, I am affected by a bald patch. It does not stop. It is magical. But, all right. On Colchis, there's this young boy in a nothing city, and he just wants nothing really for himself but to kind of just be a dick. But so this young boy, just all he wants to do is kind of be mean. So one of his favorite pastimes is to catch desert scorpions and pull their legs off them while they're alive. And he does this because it's a thrill, because if the tail stings him, he'll die. So he has to do this without getting stung. That's it. He has no aspirations, no achievements. He's destined for nothing. And his parents know it. They basically yell at him every day about being a failure. And they tell him, why don't you be like something? And they tell him he should be like the village hero, which is a small child named Erebus. Erebus is basically perfect in every way. He's studious. He's committed. He'd been accepted into the cloister to go be a priest for the Covenant of Colchis. In fact, he'd even been invited to go to the city of Varadesh. And so he was so committed to the cause that young Erebus had even started tattooing a lot of the covenant all over his face. And so this young boy, seeing the way everyone looked at Erebus, knew what to do. And so what he does is he murders Erebus.
Knew what to do.
Yeah.
And when, hey, man, what's easy to cut? Did not see your facial features. If you have your face tattooed with scripture.
Yeah, so he goes and he murders Erebus in an alley, buries the body, and then uses, it's not a marker, but copies of tattoos all over his face and steals his clothes and then leaves the city and becomes Erebus. So now we have Erebus 2.0. Erebus 2.0 eventually takes a little bit of a detour, but arrives in the main city, and he's just there to be a charlatan. He's excited. I'm going to go get rich. I'm going to get the wealth and the power. This is going to rock. And he kind of settles into this life of a charlatan. That's his whole plan. But in order to do that, he has to go to the church and read. What happens is, while he's doing this, he starts reading the text. And it doesn't take long before Erebus starts to actually
believe
some truths in there.
He sees the truth of the word.
Yeah. He begins to kind of see not just a place for himself within Colchis, but a place for himself within the galaxy. And he understands more about the four ruinous powers. And to my knowledge, I think he's the first person to actually understand that there are four ruinous powers. Because Cor Farron understood there was a higher power, but I don't think he grasped the four. Erebus starts even conversing with them to a point.
I was gonna say, he had knowledge right away, which is, again, Tzeentch type long-term planning. Of what is our grand plan to do this? And they started here.
Yeah.
They started with the Emperor, and the Emperor gave him the finger and said,
exactly, yeah.
Get your.
They tried a few spots, but Erebus was the first one that seems to really stick. Yeah. And what they get with him, one of the more famous scenes for him is he's, getting more and more comfortable, for lack of a better phrase, with the Chaos Gods. And a mirror is broken, and it's broken into four quadrants. And he looks in the mirror and he sees himself in the four quadrants broken up. And he realizes that the four gods have been there the whole time for him. They've been the ones guiding him, laying this path out for him. He is to be their champion. Erebus also during this time comes to learn all the truths of the galaxy, because he has sworn in allegiance to the Chaos Gods. He is going to serve them. He is going to be their champion in the mortal realms. So he knows about the Emperor. And so for
also, we're going to get into the Lorgar. And as much as I dislike Lorgar, and I hate Erebus for causing things, but I hate Erebus in a good way. You know, when you hate a good villain, because Erebus is wild, evil, and manipulating, and effective from the beginning.
Very much so. And so Erebus, you know, sees this, and then around the same time, Lorgar comes into the picture, and Erebus sees this and goes, yep. And he works himself into Lorgar's good graces, and he becomes one of Lorgar's like key confidants. When the Emperor arrives, Erebus looks at the Emperor, and he knows this is my enemy. And he knows his entire purpose is going to be to kill this man and overthrow him so that chaos can reign supreme. So from there, we're going to move ahead a little bit. The Great Crusade goes to begin. And as the word bearers make ready to leave Colchis, they do what everyone does. They convert the locals to Space Marines, unless they're old.
Well, pump the brakes, Johnny boy. No, you act like they were putting out some pamphlets in the mail. You can show up to my rally with I'm playing some acoustic guitar, yeah. Hanging out. No.
Yeah, what they did was they grabbed a absolute mass of the people, which means the legion starts shifting pretty quickly to being a little bit believers in God. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a tad. But one of my favorites is Corferon is one of the like, oh yeah, you're grossly too old to be a space marine, but we've got a ton of Decatren and peptides. So here you go. Like, boop, juice you up. Erebus, though, does get the organs. Erebus is an actual space marine. And what I like, though, is the Emperor does. He just drops the space marines off with Lorgar and says, hey, have at it. Go stamp out heresy. Here's a short pamphlet on my belief structure.
Which Lorgar does not read. Also, Big E, it is epic wisdom. By the way, one of the most powerful, the most intelligent, Big E shows up on this planet. They wildly worship him as a god to his face. See, yeah. He is the one true god. He goes, don't do that. I'm sure that's not going to happen. And immediately leaves.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, you guys know what to do, right? So the word bearers begin this crusade of converting worlds to the worship of the Emperor just immediately. And they find, but it's weird how they do it, though, because what's funny is they actually are finding worlds that are worshiping the chaos gods and destroying all of the chaos gods and making them put stuff up about the Emperor. And while this is happening, Lorgar's doing this other. So this is why this legion is really important, because the legacy of this legion is incredible. Here are their two big legacies. The first one's cool for us who model. The second one's much bigger. The first one is he makes a new class of warrior. His viewpoint is, if I'm going to put a city to the torch, that is a ceremonial thing. This is not something
done. Sacred thing. We should do it right.
Yeah, and the person who should be in charge of that is not a regular soldier. It's someone who has utmost standing and purpose. So we talked about earlier, you know, the guys who looked like chaplains, they become actual chaplains. The black armor skull at Crozius is...
He's in every planet they're taking it, with doing all this. I'm going to put two things together here, which he's making gigantic. He's putting up St. Peter's Basilica everywhere mm-hmm. they go. That they're making giant monuments to the Emperor. They're also doing it super slow. That's going to come back to haunt them, maybe haunt the Imperium, because the plan comes into play. But he goes about making these effectively shrine worlds before there were shrine worlds to the Emperor everywhere they go. And also, Lord, I love this part because they still use it.
Yeah. But just real quick on the chaplains, the thing about the chaplain, this is really important. So he creates these chaplains who are like the kind of the ultimate believers in the Emperor. And the lead chaplain is Erebus. The reason this matters is the chaplain, this thing gets spread to the other legions, because the chaplains being these ultimate kind of believers in the Emperor, the other legions adhere to this. This is one of the ways he will spread later into other legions with warrior lodges. More on that next cast. But at the same time, Lorgar begins to work on his masterpiece. Lorgar
Opus.
Believes in the Emperor as a god. he saw the emperor as actually more than a god. And he saw as a god who was going to deliver the universe from darkness. And he wanted everyone to understand that. And he does this weird thing where he grabs a quill and he wrote this thing. It's the year 30,000. So does Apple not have a monopoly anymore? It was an iPad. I assume they still did. But anyway, he pens the Lectictio Divinatis. And this is his proof the emperor is a divine being and deserves the worship of all. Fun story on this book. It still exists.
It's the basis for the ecclesiarchy.
Yeah.
It is the Bible of the current.
This is the only reason why I believe it may have actually been written with ink is because then you could white out the author.
That is true. Because it is also known as, it is unknown. They don't even put an author on
it. Yeah. Author unknown.
It is just a divine writing.
Yeah.
The Lorgar penned all of the beliefs of the current ecclesiarchy of the worship of the emperor. is 100% him.
The emperor should have snuffed out 3 primarchs, not 2. Just saying it.
I mean, none of this comes back to haunt him.
Yeah. But that's where we're going to break today, because of the next task, things get real spicy with Lorgar, Erebus, and Corpheron, because each starts to follow their own path, but they begin to utilize each other, and eventually they kind of all align suddenly. It's really, the word bearer lore is really fascinating. It's messed up, but it is really fascinating because of the convolution within it. But I also like, because it's actually fairly linear. Like some of the other ones we've covered, like Alpha Legion,
talk about the
Magnus,
the fact
it's hard to follow.
I do love the fact that Erebus's plans might not have worked, except for the Emperor really solidifying it. But we'll get that next time.
Oh, yeah. The Emperor is a huge buddy here. But also Magnus screws up too, by the way. Magnus has multiple easy opportunities to just stop all this from happening. And just goes, nah.
Meh.
But until next week, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys then.